Rick Witherell, who I'm told didn't get his job in Climate Watch just because of his name. But he is coordinator of Southwest for Earth Watch as well, and he leads Climate Watch in WA. Over to you, Rick.
All right. Thanks, Grant. And yeah, thanks to Steve and Yvette for the opportunity to talk today. I know I sort of flagged in the program as a local conservation group, but part of Earthwatch, which is actually an international conservation group, organisation, not for profit organisation, but I'm going to be talking about a community engagement project called Climate Watch. And I know one of the issues that was flagged in some of the sessions today was the challenge of communication and involving a broader community outside of, you know, people that are clearly passionate and involved in this area, which are inside this room, but the broader community and appreciating the challenge of climate change and what we can do about it. So Earthwatch, has anyone heard of Earthwatch before? Hopefully the number of hands is increasing each time I speak, which is good. But we sort of act as a broker in between these different partners. So, yes, that's how laser works. So a key part of Earthwatch has always been involving community in science. So started in the 70s by involving volunteers who wanted to pay to go out in the field and help scientists with their research. So the number of volunteers we engage and the number of scientific publications are sort of two of the main measures that we are judged on. Increasingly, as volunteering time and other complexities have become involved, we've engaged with business and corporate partnerships, and the emerging sort of area of corporate social responsibility is a key part of Earthwatch business, and also working with government as well. So, founded in the US in the 70s, in Australia we started up in the 80s, we're governed by an independent board, and we currently engage about 3,500 citizen scientists, so volunteers who are not strictly qualified scientists, participating in field-based research, or now online. So the model we sort of had has been people go out in the field for a couple of weeks, and Steve Williams, who's here today, leads one of those exotic projects. We also have a project out at Charles Darwin Reserve led by Rob Davis from Edith Cowan University. We've also innovated in Australia and developed something called Scientist for a Day. So rather than going to a remote location, you go to somewhere close to a major centre. So there's stuff in Sydney Harbour, there's things in the Botanic Gardens in Melbourne, and we're looking to develop projects here in Western Australia as well. You help out the scientist for a day. But online, we have developed Climate Watch, which is a national phenological network, and Steve mentioned phenology as an approach to ongoing monitoring. And this program is a way of building the brand of Earthwatch, but also, I guess, educating and involving people in appreciating what's happening with climate change. So we've seen these maps. Again, we've got changes in temperature, changes in rainfall, and most profoundly this year in the southwest, we hear lots of stories about the media about wild storms and excessive rainfall and all these great things that are happening in the east, but they're not happening here. Also, a diverse range of environments across Australia. But in 2007, in the IPCC report, there was 29,000 data sets about the impacts of climate change on biodiversity, and we contributed 6 from Australia, and none which were nationally significant. Since then, some more research has sort of come out showing the broader impacts. The Australian Magpie is through 3 different volunteer data collection programs has shown that the nesting time is sensitive to temperature. And similarly, butterflies in Australia, which have also been seen in the Northern Hemisphere, butterfly emergence is advancing, so it's becoming earlier as a result of human-induced climate change. So we've taken a model that's been quite successful internationally in the Northern Hemisphere. This is an example from the UK called Nature's Calendar, started in about 2000, now has about 5 million records. And publications and data from this system has contributed to the IPCC. So we've got Climate Watch. www.climatewatch.org.au is the website, and this provides anybody with the opportunity to record their observations online and contribute to understanding the impacts of climate change. And as a volunteer participating in this program, we're only asking you to answer 4 questions. So what species did you see? Where was it? You can pick that site on a Google map. when was it there, the date and the time, pretty straightforward, and then how is it behaving. So if it's a bird, nesting behaviour is linked to temperature and rainfall. If it's flowering, plant flowering is again can be linked to temperature, rainfall, and also calling behaviour from things like frogs is a proxy for when they're mating, and so again can be linked to temperature and rainfall. So give you a bit of an idea of some of the sort of events, looking at something like first flowering. So when you first see a flower on a plant, peak flowering, and for the species who haven't seen the final flowering yet this year, but that gives you the seasonably monitorable event. With climate change, you're going to see the flowering, first flowering advance, the peak flowering might not be as significant, and so you get a shift in that event. Now, I'm the only Earthwatch person here in Western Australia, and we've got a couple of people in Sydney and people in Melbourne, but Climate Watch, like all Earthwatch projects, very much a collaborative effort. We've got a technical advisory panel who helped with the development of the recording system, which has won a couple of awards now, including the Asia Pacific Spatial Sciences Award for Excellence in Community Engagement. We've also got a science advisory panel and a number of members of the WA panel, including Grant, Will, Leonie, Colin are here today, and Steve, involved in the national panel as well, helped with selecting the species to be part of Climate Watch. And we also have a community engagement panel, just helping with shaping some of the strategies we apply to get people involved. And I'll start to talk a bit more about how we're recruiting people as well. So the challenge we've got in Australia, even though we've got the climate changing across our continent and a diverse range of landscapes, we've got 80% of our population squashed onto the coast. So that kind of limits the potential for where we're going to find observers. So species have been selected from around Sydney in central New South Wales, Melbourne, and also in northern Queensland. WA have been a little bit more ambitious, partly because we actually have additional funding through our founding partner Rio Tinto to do broader engagement across the state. We've predominantly picked species from the southwest because of the pressures on this region, but also we are looking at engagement strategies to involve communities in the Pilbara and even up in the Kimberley as well. So we've got a lot of choice when it comes to what you can observe in Climate Watch. About 32 birds, 10 frogs, 18 insects, 5 mammals, 6 marine, and we're looking at developing the marine element of this project further starting from next year, 33 plants, 7 reptiles, 5 spiders and 1 fungus. Now, part of Climate Watch involves going outside, seeing when birds are nesting or plants are blooming, putting it into the Climate Watch system, and then this data does contribute to the Atlas of Living Australia, which sort of has had a kind of quiet launch at the end of October, but the idea with the Atlas is it's collecting data from a range of different services and providing it online. So far, we've been operating for about a year, and you can see that the distribution of where observations are coming from pretty much matches up where the population is. This shows one of the challenges we've got. We're kind of aiming for about 10,000 observers contributing an average of 10 observations per year. Now, clearly, the observers aren't distributed uniformly, and neither are the observations. In fact, this is actually kind of typical, though, for a lot of involvement or community projects, even when you sort of go to, say, community engagement for policy development, you'll see similar sort of levels of participation. You've got about 10% contributing 90% of your energy, and then the rest sort of trail off beyond that. Here are some of the species that people have been recording on. Top 10 species, 9 of which are birds, and 1 introduced butterfly. But I will zoom in a little bit more on the magpie and some of the observations we're getting on this species so far. Now, with something like Climate Watch, we can tell a bit about distribution because we've got the location of the observations, but also an important element is the phenology. So that's the behaviour that's linked to rainfall or temperature and those sort of seasons. So this activity here is the phenological signal, while this activity and these observations here really tell us a bit about distribution. And the challenge we've got is the sort of capacity building to help people contribute the right observations, because you can get fatigued. Like if you try and record every time you see a magpie, you're going to get a little bored and a little exhausted and not really see much sort of result from that. So even though we haven't put in a high barrier to participating, we're looking at, okay, we build up the network of observers and then build the capacity after that, rather than intensive training before you can become a climate watcher. So some of the ways we've engaged people, we collaborated with Landcare this year for Landcare Week, and through communications to their networks and general PR, suggested people become a citizen scientist and register on Climate Watch and start recording. Got some mixed results, got some registrations, about 400 registrations extra because of that, and a lot of those are representing, say, schools, so that's another 100 people behind that person. But only about 40 were active in the week, so there are some challenges each time you sort of start to filter, you get a sort of funnel effect. Conservation Week, we launched the use of 25 extra species in Western Australia. So these are species that have been selected that are linked to the WA research, can be found here, and were recommended by the WA Science Panel. One of which is the white-striped bat, and asked people to listen out for the white-striped bat during Conservation Week, and continuing to extend that survey and try and see if people can hear the bat in their backyard or in their local area after dark. Another approach to engaging people and addressing the challenge of capacity building, so how to identify the species, how to enter data onto the website, is through a model called a Climate Watch Trail or a Phenology Trail, and we've set one up at Piney Lakes Reserve in the city of Melville. We've got a map with a bunch of sites, spots around that reserve. You can walk this trail just with the pocket guide in your hand, and really you're looking out for different species, and just you can tick off your observations and then get back to a computer and enter that data. We had a launch event on Saturday this weekend just passed, and involved about 30 people, almost 40 records were entered on the day, 10 guides were taking small groups around, and some of the feedback was being really, really positive. Like, we're getting a sort of broad range of participation across different age groups. People enjoyed the event, which is great. And I think that's about it I've got for the evaluation there. But also people suggested they'd be interested in coming to another event. So the challenge is trying to set up more of these sort of federated Climate Watch trails with different local government agencies or environmental education groups, where they've got the capacity to deliver this trail beyond our initial sort of support and engage people in regularly collecting data. So I guess the role of something like this in adaptation is it provides a community of people who are outside of science, outside of policy, who are engaged in climate change and starting to appreciate the challenges, and it provides much more of an involved communication approach rather than just hefty reports and doom and gloom. And people have a good time participating in it, which is great. So I urge you all to find the website. I've got these little pocket guides which sort of have an introduction of four WA species. Grab one on the way out to lunch and become a climate watcher. Encourage your friends and family, because together we can all start to understand more about it. Thank you.